It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Save big money on your next upgrade now at Menards. Some things never go out of style, like tile from Mohawk. You can count on the durability, easy maintenance, and timeless beauty of tile. With over 350 ceramic, porcelain, mosaic, and glass tiles to choose from, Mohawk Tile provides long-lasting charm in any space. Visit the store and Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on in our weekly flyer.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey everyone, Kyle Meredith here. We're taking a few weeks off here at Kyle Meredith With, but wanted to thank you for listening in this year by sharing some of our favorite interviews from 2022. We'll be back with brand new episodes on January 6th, but for now, here's my chat with Tears for Fears.
Sorry, I thought this was a phone interview.
There you go, so did I. Big capitals from now on. It's not a phoner.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence, the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the episode, make yourself comfortable, and hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover some new ones, know what's happening in the music world, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith, that's me, I'm the namesake of the show. Today, I get to talk with two of my biggest songwriting heroes, Tears for Fears. That's Roland Orzabal and Kurt Smith. They are back with their first new album in nearly 20 years. It's been nearly 20 years. They did put out a greatest hits a few years ago, and it had a couple of new songs on there. In fact, one of those new songs actually been redone again for this new album. But otherwise, there were some covers too. There were some covers in the early part of last decade, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan of. But otherwise, I think I can say that for real this time. But otherwise, this is their first new full album in nearly 20 years. And when you think about what they've already given the world of music, I mean, I'm holding in my hands their greatest hits, the Tears Roll Down greatest hits. You know, first off, I'll bring up the big one. Everybody Wants to Rule the World. It's maybe the best song of the entire 80s. Like, I'm not the only one who thinks that. I've got a few nerd friends out there, and we've had the conversation, like, you know, if you can define an entire decade by one song, what would it be? And there's something about that song. There's something about that song that holds magic. I mean, it transcends the decade. This group transcends the 80s. But that song, which happened to come out in the 80s, it's, like, the best song of the entire decade. And there's not a time that it comes on, even as much as it's been played throughout these last few decades, there's not a time that comes on that I don't stop everything that I'm doing and sing along or just listen and just let it wash over me. But it just goes on from there. Sowing the Seeds of Love, Woman in Chains, Shout, Head Over Heels, Mad World, the original version, Mother's Talk, Chain. Like I said, it's they've just offered so many songs throughout the years. And their new record is fantastic. It's as good as I hoped it would be. In fact, it's probably even better than I expected it to be. Just when you think of, you know, what's in the bucket this time around. When you're a songwriter for this long, it's not always a home run. But man, I love this. So we're going to get into it. We're going to hear about the painful process that led to the album's completion. It was not an easy road. That does get into those covers and what they call the speed dating with young producers. That, in fact, they made an album and then it went poof. It went nowhere. They were like, no, this is not the record. You're going to hear all about that, along with some heavy topics as well, both on the global front and the personal front. I want to ask Roland about his use of ghosts and demons and the dead in his work, but especially on this record as well. They've got a tour in 2022 with Garbage. And, of course, there's going to be the question, does this lead to more new music? So let's do it. We're discussing The Tipping Point. It's Kyle Meredith with Tears for Fears.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Congratulations. The Tipping Point is such a good record. I mean, it's a great record, a really good record. And I know that wasn't a given. I know that wasn't promised, but you guys totally knocked it out of the park. So I'll just start with the compliments right there. Congrats.
Thank you very much. Keep them coming.
Oh, trust me. I can over-compliment. It's fine. I'll keep that coming the whole time. When I look back, I mean, for a lot of us fans, you know, it has been a road to this, a road to the period. When, you know, I think I first started hearing about, you know, the possible new music, of course, when you guys released the covers early last decade, talking about Ready to Start, Boy from School, and My Girls, which once I started thinking about it, even today, I think I listen to your all's versions more than I go back and listen to the original versions. Like, that's really was good stuff. And for that to have been a starting point, if it's the starting point or just a starting point, now that you've got that lens of hindsight, what did you have, like, whatever you might have had in mind for the album then, how close did that become to what it is now?
Not very close would be the answer to that. You know, I mean, doing the cover versions, while it was a fun exercise, you know, again, was one of the things our management suggested back then. And then we went on this process of speed dating with you know, sort of modern or modernish songwriters. Again, at the sort of suggestion of our management company to try and sort of drag us kicking and screaming into the 21st century. And it was, you know, it wasn't that we were against it. We were quite game to try that, to see if it brought us anything different or taught us anything. And at the end of it, we were left with these sort of maybe 15 to 18 attempts at trying to make a modern hit single. And it really didn't have any balance. It didn't have any ebb and flow. It was all kind of on one level, and we just didn't feel it was representative of us at that point in time. So we basically had to kind of start again. And you know, all of it led us to you know, where we are with this album. So I'm not really knocking it. I mean, it did lead us to where we've ended up, but it was a kind of painful process.
Did any of those songs, the discarded album, like, I know Stay, there was a version of that on the Greatest Hits that came out a few years ago, but did any of the other songs make it over in a rewritten form?
Yeah, well, we revisited quite a few of them. There's My Demons was a very successful track we did with Sasha Skarbek, who we did a lot of songs with. We merely took that, changed some of the lyrics, simplified it, took out some of the information that made it on. We're really, really proud of that. And it works beautifully before Rivers of Mercy, very new song. What else? End of Night we did on our own. That was old from the previous track. Long, long, long time we pretty much did on our own. So yeah, I mean, there's not many. No, to answer your question, friends. I think that's it, isn't it?
Well, there were tracks we started during the process. I mean, you know, five of the tracks were existing tracks, but probably not coincidentally, the majority of those five tracks we kept were ones we'd done on our own anyway. So they fit in far better with the new tracks. As Roland said, My Demons is one that really did from that writing, those writing sessions really did fit in with the new songs, because it was at a point in the album where we wanted something that was that intense. And if you can imagine there being 15 My Demons on one album, it would be a little overly intense, but that's basically what we had.
And that is a monster of a song. It is one of my favorite moments on this record, just maybe because of where it's placed and how it sounds, like you're saying, against everything. But there's also that line, My Demons Don't Get Out That Much. I mean, it, one of those moments where the goosebumps sort of happened the first time I heard that. And I know lyrically there's a lot going on this record, and I'll circle around those too. But since we're on the subject of that song, what caused that one? If you can pinpoint it.
I don't really want to sort of, I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like fun at the time. That was actually the first line of lyric that came out. My demons don't get out that much. It seems more relevant nowadays. When they do get out, it all gets quite ugly in society. But no, I mean, I love the lyrics. For me, it's like Paul Simon's Boy in a Bubble on crystal meth, if you see what I'm saying. Uh-huh. So it's got that intense wordplay in the verses, and just a crazy, very youthful, dare I say, adolescent even, alternative chorus.
That's one of those I'm hoping to hear live.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So you go through the producer and the co-writer thing, and as the story that you all have been telling goes, at some point you realize that your partnership is with each other. How was it to connect as songwriters again?
That was the key. That really was the thing that solved a huge problem and issue. That we were surrounded with very talented people. But really, it's us putting our heads together. It's us connecting emotionally and spiritually. And early 2020, when we got together through desperation, as much as anything else, in Kurt's house in LA with two acoustic guitars and a little iPhone voice memo, and came up with No Small Thing, the track number one, we kind of thought, oh my God, why haven't we been doing this for the last 7 years? You know, because it's from our imagination and from our love of music, all the music that we grew up listening to and aren't afraid of using those influences from the 60s and 70s. And we just went crazy with that song. It's a journey in and of itself. The whole track is a journey, a massive journey. And that tells you, that's what the album's going to be about. So that was a really fantastic experience for us.
And it is. I mean, the way it starts with just the acoustic, almost a little bit of an Americana country flair to it, just building. Absolutely. And building. And maybe it's purposeful then that the line is in there, one more song to sing, one more story to tell.
Exactly. You got it in one.
Yeah, yeah. So once you figured it out, and maybe it comes natural at this point, but was there the point where you thought, what does this album need to represent?
Well, I think once we got that track and we realized that, you know, that track was a journey in and of itself, as Roland mentioned, and you realize that that's kind of what we're good at, is making albums that actually do have an ebb and flow, that have a journey, that have some meaning. So at that point in time, when we went back into the studio, the process was actually very simple. It really didn't take us that long. I mean, it's painful to look back on when you think we'd spent years doing this speed dating songwriting stuff and it didn't end up working. And then once we actually sat down together and wrote No Small Thing, it came together very quickly. But, you know, having said that, you know, would it have had we done that 7 years ago? You know, maybe not, but who knows? Right. But it really wasn't a difficult process once we kind of got a direction.
Well, you know, so the sounds are great. The way they're put together, you know, it is so much fun to kind of listen to, especially as an album from front to back. And then, you know, you start paying attention to what's going on in the songs. And let's take those opening sounds of Rivers of Mercy, because that's speaks pretty well to what it sounds like, you know, a good portion of this record is about. I'm in Louisville, you know, when the BLM hits, we were one of the epicenters of it that was going on around here. And we all know the history, it shook the world. How does that stand? How did you all want that represented in these songs? Not just BLM, but everything that was happening globally at that point.
Well, for me personally, this was, we were in lockdown number one in the UK, and it coincided with the most remarkable stretch of weather, almost Mediterranean. So there I was trapped in this 3-acre estate in the West Country with swimming pool and tennis court. It was hell, you know, and you put on, you know, the news and, or go on the internet and you see this stuff going on in America, the rage, the absolute rage, justifiable, understandable, and disturbing. And the contrast between what was going on there and the serenity of this imposed, you know, imprisonment was kind of crazy. Rivers of Mercy had been floating around for not very long, actually. That was another new song. And it was like, well, how do we get out of this? How do we sort of wash away the pain? You know what I mean? How do we get rid of it? And as this, we have, I think, two conflicting instincts within us. One, the rage one, but we also have this deep desire for forgiveness and for redemption. And so that's why the song starts, the streets are all, you know, are burning. There's trouble in the town. You hear the noise of the riots before it starts. But then you have to let go. The track washes over you. It does things to your brain. It calms you down. And it's a beautiful, I think, one of the, again, with No Small Thing, Rivers of Mercy is one of the key tracks to this album. And as someone said the other day, that it's a future classic.
Yeah, I felt that way about quite a few on here. And listening to that, like, tackling the big topics you all have done throughout your entire career, you know, do you feel that the way you approached it has changed from all the way back, like Suffer the Children? You know, when you're looking at this, like has it changed for you?
I mean, I think as you get older, you become more objective and more concerned about things that aren't just on a personal level. You know, you certainly, your views change or become more refined when you have children, because then you're looking at the future and the future they have. Mm-hmm. So then you're more concerned about societal things because, you know, they're the ones that are going to have to grow up in it. On the same level, they're the ones that end up convincing you that everything will be fine because they're the next generation and they're better than us. So, you know, there are two levels of that, you know, of appreciation for the next generation. But yeah, so I guess you become, you know, your view becomes wider as you get older, I think.
Also, if I may add that, you know, when we started off, we were kids. We had the songs from the age of 19 years old. We were blaming our parents. We were blaming the establishment. We honestly, like Kurt's just talked about his children, we honestly believe that things would be better once we get rid of the people in power. We're now 60 years old, believe it or not, and we are older than a lot of leaders in the world. We can no longer blame our parents, if you see what I'm saying. So we're just trying to, because we care deeply about things, the two of us, we are just trying to, with our art and music, to reflect back exactly what is going on without it being an argument between left and right, which it doesn't go anywhere, because there's what's happening is we're going through this incredible time, but no one's really speaking from their heart, if you see what I'm saying. Everything's being shut down. Everything is, freedom of speech is being limited. And so therefore, I think it's the job of the artist just to kind of take a step back and go, okay, this is what's going on, guys. How do you feel about it? Because that's the way I think we can maybe progress to the next stage of life.
Some wisdom, hopefully. Wisdom with age, as easy as that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The I'll quickly just hit on the other end too. The use of ghosts and demons and the dead mm-hmm. and the way you write about them, I've always found as an interesting tool. I know that comes from a very heavy personal and dark place for you, especially Roland. But using those, and I guess I'm asking this question a bit separated from that, but using those as a songwriting tool, I think has always been, I gravitate towards that. And I don't really think I have a specific question here, but just as you approached it, those came in with lots of different songs. I don't know, was that obvious to you as you were writing it?
Well, personally, that's something, yeah, I've always been obsessed with, really, I suppose. You know, I don't know why, other than the fact that I have a Capricorn moon in the eighth house. You know, who knows, or Neptune in Scorpio. I don't know why. I kind of feel it's important. It's a taboo subject. And it's having been through a whole terrible bout of grief in end of 2017 and throughout 2018, having become seriously ill from grief. You know, it's kind of like we don't talk about it. It's like this. We've lost any sense of belief about death. We've lost that. We've been convinced through science that's it, it's over. So therefore we're left holding this kind of puzzle. You know, it makes the question of life unanswerable, if you see what I'm saying, because we're born, we don't know where we came from, and then we go somewhere, or maybe nowhere. But it's like we're not, there's no discussion about it, because it's, death is such a taboo. And it is now in society. This is the big thing to fear, you know, if you see what I'm saying, you know. But I it's something I think about a lot, you know. I do, I entertain those ideas a lot, you know.
Well, I've always appreciated your angle with that, and it's a beautiful poetry that you all have made. I'll wrap up here. You're going to be on tour with Garbage in 2022, one of my all-time favorite bands. I've had Shirley and Butch on the show many, many times. So I cannot wait to see you guys out there. Do you have a relationship with the band? Because what a bill that is.
Not a relationship as such. I mean, I've met Shirley on a couple of occasions, and I've met Butch on a few occasions. They are very nice people. So it should be at least. I mean, you know, our band are great. Our live band are great and the easiest people to get on with. And having met Shirley and Butch, I'm sure it'll be easy to fit them into the tour. So it should be fun, I hope, you know. I mean, I'm hoping we still get to do it next year, but the way the pandemic's going, but I feel positive about it.
Well, the obvious wrap-up question here is, this chapter 3 of a continuation, is that the hope?
The best laid plans of mice and men and tears and tears often go astray. So, you know, we're going to go on tour. I mean, there's no excuse for not producing a killer set with not just the old songs, but with these new songs. It's all geared up for a crazy, crazy, brilliant show. And it's unforgivable if we don't deliver that.
Yeah. And as far as plans for the future, you know, we've done that before, and they more often than not don't come to fruition. So we've given up on that, you know. I mean, the plan was to write a big modern sounding record, and that's, you know, we gave up on that because it wasn't right for us. So we'll do what feels right when the time comes.
Well, the recipe that you all make is just outstanding, and the fact that you're still able to produce this, you know, I love what you all do. Thank you so much for doing it. Congratulations on the tipping point. And Roland, Kurt, thank you both so much for taking the time to talk about it.
You're welcome. Good to speak to you.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Oh, a big thanks. Roland, Kurt, Tears for Fears. The new album is called The Tipping Point. And a big thanks to you as well, again, for checking out the episode, checking out the series. Please do hit the subscribe button before you get out of here. We put out 3 new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at all the usual spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Merritt Meredith With. After that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all three of them at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
We can edit that out.
Kidding me. I mean, unfortunately, my phone comes through to my iPad. I should turn my phone off.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.